This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
The Federal Reserve is in play this week with its much-anticipated rate cut set for Wednesday, and it's sure to be a market mover. I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, we're talking Fed policy and stocks. Let's bring on Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers here in Chicago. Matt, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
Hey, always glad to be invited.
Yes, and the word of the week, Fed, and its expected interest rate cut on Wednesday. And Matt, that's where I'd like you to start. Thoughts on Fed policy and markets going forward?
Well, the Fed backed themselves into a corner. You probably recall how critical I've been of this monetary policy going all the way back to 2020. Tools in the toolbox that the Fed has to combat rising inflation is to raise interest rates. But raising rates is just that. It's a tool. And like any other tool, if you apply it conscientiously to the appropriate situation, you'll get a good outcome. If you apply it poorly to the wrong situation, you're going to get a disastrous outcome. Now, when you use interest rates in order to back off inflation, it means that you have a roaring economy that is, quote unquote, overheating, where demand is driving prices and everybody's making money and everybody's buying so fast he can't keep up and inflation starts to rise. So what do? You tighten down monetary policy a little bit to slow down a high rev economy. Well, what they did, instead of using a hammer to drive in a nail, they used a hammer to drive in a screw. We did not have a roaring economy when they started raising interest rates. The inflation that we got was a direct result of lousy energy policy, and it cascaded from there. So all they did by raising rates in the face of runaway inflation is prolong the misery that we've all been living with this whole time. They continued using the jobs reports as justification to say that the economy was in great shape.
Which, by the way, just want to throw one thing out there. By the way, they were grossly off with those job numbers, and they had to recently revise them, too. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, yes, and that is exactly where I was headed with this. But it's insult to injury. Because for all of this, quote-unquote, wonderful job creation that they were touting, that wasn't job creation. It was job replacement. We spent 3 years trying to claw our way back to the level of employed people that we had before the pandemic. Those weren't new jobs. Those were jobs being replaced for the ones that were lost during the COVID period. That was point one. Point number two, which is exactly what you just said, and this is the insult to injury, while the Fed kept pointing at the jobs numbers as validation for the idea that the economy was strong and that high interest rates weren't hurting the economy, they kept pointing to the jobs report. Well, guess what? The jobs report over a 12-month period were overstated by almost a million jobs. Now, we rang the alarm bell on this middle of last year. I've been following this jobs data for decades. I have never, one of the key indicators, you know, we always get the headline number, right? You know, job, you know, net new jobs was this, and job, the unemployment rate ticked up, ticked down, whatever. But there are literally hundreds of lines of data in that report. And one of the things they report are the revisions to the prior 2 months of jobs data. And what would be typical 1 year, one month, you would say, okay, well, we've got the June numbers out today. And the May and April numbers between those 2 months are, they were off by 18,000 jobs one way or another. What we saw all of last year, we were seeing downward revisions to the previous 2 months' estimates, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 jobs a month. Overstatement from what had been reported on the initial release.
Right.
Now, the Fed knows all this. What the hell are they doing holding interest rates high when they know, they knew month after month after month, they knew that the jobs creation data was overstated.
So now they're finally moving a little bit. I mean, what's that mean? Where are we at now? I mean, they've delayed by addressing this issue, as you mentioned. What's the proper move, and where do they go from here?
You know, they've really backed themselves into a corner here. They have no choice but to start cutting the rates. The problem is, as everybody was standing around waiting for them to start bringing down the rates as an expression of an economy that was coming back in line. Now the whole world, there should have been a much larger reaction in the market today than there was. They come out with a 25 basis point reduction, which, you know, that's a decent start. It'll help. It's way too little, way too late. But now, instead of saying, hey, we did our job, we got inflation under control, the economy's getting back on its feet, we're doing great. No, now what they've done is rate cut is an admission that the economy was never good enough to support the level that they were at all this time.
How far do they start cutting to, and what's that mean for the market? What's things look like going forward, especially in light of a presidential election year?
And, you know, that's, you know, let's just shoot the elephant in the room, right? Anybody who believes that politics doesn't factor into this, it hasn't been paying attention long enough.
And a lot of folks do. A lot of analysts are like, oh, don't just ignore it all. But to totally ignore it, and you're speaking to that, just that doesn't make sense either.
No, it doesn't make sense, because I don't care who you are, you have an opinion. And your opinion, every single one of us has an opinion, has a philosophy, and that drives our decision-making all day, every day, in our jobs, in our personal lives, and there's nothing wrong with that. There is nothing wrong with that. That's the way human beings are wired to work. But when you start doing it with an agenda in mind, when you are trying to secure an outcome that would not otherwise get there on its own. Well, now we start to have a problem, and I have to point no further than I've been following this jobs report all these decades. I have never, ever, not until this year, have I ever seen overstatements month after month after month where the number is, you know, mid to upper five digits.
So there's a credibility problem for sure, is what you're saying as well.
Without a doubt.
Okay, so they have a credibility problem. The data has been off. What's this mean for markets? And again, how far do they take this? So what do you think their play is, or who knows?
I think they're going to try to maintain the appearance of discipline and smart, neither of which they've demonstrated any of to this point. But I think they're going to continue to come down at quarter point intervals. If it were me and I were voting, and for the record, nobody but you has asked my opinion, or certainly nobody that would listen with regard to policy. But if it were me, I'd have interest rates right back down to zero, just like they had been in the prior years, and try to get this thing jump-started again. Because coming down a quarter point at a time, it's just not going to be enough fast enough to really impact the real estate market, which, you know, from all things, you know, everything else flows from two sources: cost of energy and the ability to buy a house. Everything else flows from that.
It seems like if that's the case and that's your feeling and they're coming in real light, the economy and markets don't look so bright as it, from your lens, correct?
Well, the economy, no. The markets, they'll be fine. The markets have been it used to be, and when I say used to be, I mean, you know, back really until the early 90s, the markets were a good proxy for the health and direction of the economy. That stopped being true once we got internet trading and everybody could get online and trade cheap and the volume exploded. The markets right now, in your experience, Andy,
yeah,
which is of course considerable, in your experience, we have runaway inflation, we have a weak economy, we have job creation that has been absurdly overstated. We have wars in Europe. We've got countries like Iran and North Korea, nuclear saber rattling, and the markets just continue to fly.
You know, they say climbing a wall of worry. And, you know, you look at some of the earnings of corporations, and for a lot of ways, like the retail sales numbers, they've held up pretty well, even though everybody's in debt to keep those going. But yeah, I see it both ways. I see a lot of the risks and the downside here. I've been, you know, anybody who's listened to this podcast, I've skewed a little bit to the bearish side as of late. But you know, I guess it's one of those situations of wall of worry, and it's not like 2008. So yeah, it's kind of a mixed bag for me right now. But there are a lot of threats, and I've been surprised that the markets have held up the way they have. And there's a lot of me that's looking for a bit of a correction here as well.
Well, yeah, we got that little hiccup.
Yeah, I was looking for a lot more, here. But yeah, that yen carry trade unravel. But I thought that was just the start, and you know, here we are again. But again, if you want to move much higher, you're going to have to break the levels that we're at, and I'm not sure they're going to, you know, go through.
No, this resistance feels this ceiling feels pretty thick and heavy to me. You know, because we bumped up against it now a few times, but you know, some of the, when you're looking for the markets to give you some indication about whether or not there are cracks, in the foundation, then you look toward, you saw what happened, what was it? Was it last week or the week before? Ally Financial came out and they said, all right, you guys, the consumer is having trouble paying us. And they went from the mid-40s down to 30. I actually got early assigned on a short put on Ally Financial because they came out and said what everybody knows, but nobody is talking about out loud, that the consumer is struggling.
Yeah, and they're pretty much tapped out. And then the other one, we've talked about it before. We didn't even talk about it today. All the empty buildings in major metropolitan areas, major downtown areas across the country, still not nearly what they were, you know, before the pandemic. And then there's another factor that I've seen here too. The markets have moved, but the transports have really been a lagger here. And I really see them as a big leading indicator. And I'll tell you, when they start getting up to the levels they are now, there is a ton of resistance. And that tells me that there may be some softness coming. Unless they make a big move from here higher, the transports have just kind of been a little bit of a lagger here. And again, an ultimate leading indicator. So there are a lot of different things in play right now.
Yeah, and two entirely different points there, both of which I'm glad we're going to talk about. When I was on Gaines, I want to say it was last time I was with you, I want to say it was back maybe February or March, and we talked at length about the looming disaster in commercial real estate and those kinds of failures have, you know, they've continued to pile up and accelerate. I saw what I consider to be the first good news on that front since we spoke of this last February.
Yeah.
And that was Amazon came out and said, that's it. Everybody back to work 5 days.
Yes, and we're seeing a lot more companies doing that as well.
Yeah, and when you see an employer the size of Amazon, high profile, make that kind of news, that, you know, again, I hope it's not too little too late, but that to me was an extraordinary sign. It actually made me smile, and I was sitting alone. That was good news on that front, but that threat is still out there and unfortunately very healthy.
All right, we're going to hit Matt up for his Blue World Economic Index in just 1 second, but we got to take a quick break. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If that's an option for you, I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gaines episode drops. We drop Gaines episodes on Wednesday mornings. We'll be right back with Matt after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
All right, we're back with Matt Mategan, CEO of Blue World Asset Managers here in Chicago. So as we were heading into break, I teased your Blue World Economic Index, Matt. So what do you got for us?
Sure, just to review quick, the Blue World Economic Index, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm a business consultant, and that requires that I really have my finger on the pulse of what the underlying economy is doing at any given time. And the markets, they can be highly reactive to these reports. For example, we could have a really, really bad GDP report come out on Thursday, and the markets will drop 500 points. The very next day, we could have a good jobs report come out, and the markets can completely erase the drop from the day before. When you're running a business, when you're managing a business, you can't be that reactive. You can't be that knee-jerk. You have to really have an understanding of what trends are. So we follow 50 different economic reports from public and private sources every month, and we index them in three different ways. Number one is the quality of the report today. But then we view it through the context of what has the report done in the last 12 months, and what has it done in the last 24 months. So we take today and then the trends, the 12 and 24 month trends, receive a higher weighting than that of today. So we can really get a good idea of where the economy is headed and by sector. So one of our go-to reports is a private source report called the CASP Rate Index. The CASP Rate Index is specific to transport, and it's everything from semi-trucks to air to intermodal and ocean shipping. It covers everything. And exactly what you just said a few minutes ago, that index has been just in the doldrums for 2.5 years. That's hitting, of course, the Dow Theory Transport.
Right, exactly. And major, like some of the front-running stocks are kind of, that speaks to the same kind of concept. Those transports, those front-running stocks, and they've experienced that too, or experienced softness. So, you know, we've kind of established the background. What's that mean for investors? I've talked to some folks who are still completely bullish, ignore the election. Things are going a lot higher, regardless of who wins, and things are settled. I have other people who are other analysts who've said that the market has fundamentally changed. We are entering a potentially an era of more flatter markets, going more horizontal than vertical. And they say that dividend stocks and locking in some really juicy yields is the play. What do you think, Matt?
Honestly, I think what I always think. And what I always think is it is as likely as not to rise from here, fall from here. I think it's going to move laterally until after the election. It would be naive to think that the election, or more importantly, the anticipation of the outcome of the election, wouldn't have an impact. It certainly does. And the pattern of the last couple of months, and, you know, we're going to see this continue, I think, now that we're past Labor Day, we're going to kind of bounce along here sideways a little bit. But it's not going to last very long. Once we get past the election and the dust settles and people settle in, then I look for the markets to continue to rise with their usual cycle of corrections. So the way we approach this is we're very, very happy to participate in the market rising, but we've always got that safety net under there in case we get a correction, an overcorrection, or an out-and-out COVID-style crash. The way we manage this is, okay, how high, how much space is there between the net and the high wire? In a bull market, of course, that space gets pretty wide. Times like now, when we've got so much uncertainty, well, our protections are quite a bit tighter. And what does that mean? Well, like you said, high dividend, low volatility, high dividend yielding stocks. But it also means some inverse index funds. It means some puts on the major indexes and very, very targeted sector specific, like AI, for example. AI is going to be around for a while. So we have several plays in that space that we like more than we like something like auto right now as they try to recover from their, you know, their big hack, of course.
So you're certainly sitting in there picking sectors, being strategic here for sure, it sounds like.
Yeah, very, very surgical right now. You know, it's not the time to, we don't think it's the time to throw the gates wide open and say, take everything. We're being very, very targeted, and we're not, if we pick a sector or we pick a stock in that sector and it disappoints us, everything is on a really, really short leash right now.
Okay. And then what kind of sectors? Give us your top three favorite sectors right now.
I love AI right now. And we are more heavily into, so one of the picks in AI, we do have a couple of the individual companies, but we are absolutely in love with the SOXQ, the SOXQ, which is the Philadelphia Semiconductor Index.
Right, right.
That one, you know, it gives you exposure.
What's the ticker on that, Matt? What's the ticker on that so people can...
SOXQ.
SOXQ. Okay.
Yep.
So that the ticker on that, and that's the Philadelphia Semiconductor, the Invesco Semiconductor ETF. And again, that's a NASDAQ, the ticker on that ETF. S like Sam, O like Oscar, X like Xerox, Q like Queen. SOXQ. So Matt, as we wrap up the Gains podcast, what's the takeaway and one final idea?
Keep your money working. Don't be afraid. Don't pull it all out and put it under the mattress, because then you're truly giving money away. Just make sure that at all times you have the defense on the field. When the market is roaring, well, you're playing a prevent defense. You give it a lot of space. But times like now, with all of the kinds of uncertainty we've talked about, we barely scratched the surface, of course. You know, now you're more into a blitz style defense. You don't want to leave a lot of room to the downside. Make sure the defense is on the field.
All right. Big thanks to Matt Mategan, CEO, Blue World Asset Managers here in Chicago. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If that's an option for you, I've been told that's podcast gold. Totally appreciate the solid there. And as always, subscribe and turn on the notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings, and I look forward to seeing you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast powered by Odyssey.